Trees are potentially more important than you think. They're not just homes for native species. They're not just pretty when you see them on the side of a hill or a mountain. They actually are an integral part of your life, whether you necessarily realize it or not. And the impacts of deforestation affects the ecology of the island, but they also affect humans psychologically and economically. But that if we work together as, and particularly if we work together as a community, the detrimental damage or the damage that has been done to the environment can be reversed in a surprisingly short period of time. And the benefits of this will be absolutely huge. Like I say, psychologically, ecologically, and economically massive.
Hi, I'm Tim.
And I'm Stacey.
And welcome to We're Not Doomed,
a podcast all about the human nature crisis that we're facing and what we can do about it in the Caribbean. Today we're talking with Adam Mitchell. We met Adam about 2 years ago when he applied for the position of on-site manager for the reforestation project on Sint Eustatius. As you have heard in the introduction of this podcast, Adam will be sharing his passion and love for trees and reforesting the island of Sint Eustatius, but also the importance of trees on a more global, universal level. He'll be sharing about the causes of deforestation and the consequences of it in the Caribbean. And most importantly, he'll be sharing about what we can do about it. Let's go to our conversation with Adam Mitchell. Look who we have here.
Hello, how are you guys?
Hello. Hi, Adam.
Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well.
Awesome. We are so happy to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. Well, hello from all the way from the Caribbean, I guess. I'm at home now. Yeah. So a little bit warmer over here than you guys are over there, I suspect.
Just a tad.
The weather's pretty good, actually.
Oh yeah. Ah, excellent.
It has been. Although it's been surprisingly sunny.
Yeah.
Although it's very, very dry here at the moment, so we're basically towards the end of the dry season. So as dry as it gets, and everything's dusty, and our site is all brown apart from in the shade houses. Really, it's that time of year we'll be glad when the rain starts again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you just made a perfect segue for us to kind of delve in a little bit more about who you are and what you're doing, where you're living, and tell us.
My name is Adam Mitchell, and I'm currently the reforestation site manager on a little island called Sint Eustatius, which a lot of people have probably never heard of, and that's maybe not surprising. It's in the little Dutch island in the Lesser Antilles, which is kind of the eastern part of the Caribbean. I am working for an organization called STANAPA, which is the National Parks Agency on Sint Eustatius. And I'm managing the reforestation project on the island. So our big plan here is to start to replace initially lots of the large trees that were blown down during Hurricane Irma in 2017, but then also to continue reforesting the island and also kind of getting a bit of agroforestry in there and so on to try and benefit the island.
And what was it that pulled you towards this job?
For a long time I've been very interested in the idea of permaculture. So permaculture is where you effectively build a self-sustaining ecosystem out of productive trees. So things like fruit trees, but also other productive plants. So you can have ground cover plants such as squashes and melons, and then other plants which are sort of low shrubs and trees. And you try and put them together in a way that you make a self-sustaining forest. So you don't have to put anything into the system. You don't have to put any fertilizers in. You don't have to use any pesticides. If it's done well and done correctly, you often don't have to put any extra water into the system. So you have a forest that grows as well as a natural forest, except it's all out of these productive plants. So that's been an interest of mine for a very long time. And I was actually first on St. Eustatius, which we locally know as Statia, because I came here to do some work with a local critically endangered iguana species. I'd actually been working as an iguana ecologist before as well. And I heard about the project while I was on St. Eustatius for a few months back in 2018. And that's when I got in touch with you guys, basically. And the rest is history, really. It's nice. The nice thing about being here is because it is a very small island, you can have a lot of impact, and you can really make a big difference because it's, mm-hmm. it's kind of a small ecosystem.
Yeah. So why permaculture and why reforesting? Why is that so important to you?
Well, so one of the big issues Asia has at the moment is we have, among other things, a lot of erosion, which has serious implications for anyone trying to do agriculture. It has serious implications for infrastructure such as roads. It has knock-on effects on marine ecosystems as well. So when you have lots of erosion, you end up with water running into the sea. This can cause cliff collapses, and it can cause these huge sediment plumes. And then what happens is very, very fine sediment. It settles over coral reefs, and it smothers the reefs, and it can kill them. And this in turn has an impact on the local economy, with fishing and diving being two of the more important parts of that economy. So Statia has a very serious problem with erosion, and this is a combination of historical land clearances, but the major factor here is actually feral roaming animals. So you're talking sheep, goats, donkeys, and cows, which are not native to the island. There are no native mammals to the island except the bats, and they more or less eat pretty much everything down to the ground, with the exception of a small number of toxic plants that they won't eat. And their hooves also break up the surface of the ground in a lot of places. But in other places, they compact the surface of the ground. So you have a situation where you end up with huge volumes of water running over this very hard packed surface. And then when it gets to areas where they have pulverized the surface of the ground, it then infiltrates the ground at a very, very high speed. And this can cause landslides and so on. Quite a serious problem.
So, Adam, some of these problems sound quite serious. Do you think it's a problem unique to St. Eustatius?
No, absolutely not. So this is actually a major issue in a lot of places. And in a lot of places, you wouldn't necessarily expect. What you tend to find is that in many places, including in Europe, for example, the use of sheep and goats and other livestock as an element of the landscape is so entrenched in our history. So I'm from the UK, for example, and I went to university in Wales, and sheep are very much a part of the Welsh identity. And people have farmed sheep for thousands of years. But what you find now is that areas where historically there were huge forests are now effectively these wastelands, and there are people that have referred to it to these heathlands in Wales as Cambrian Desert, because the actual species diversity is extremely low, and you get very few trees there. And this is because these sheep are eating all of these juvenile trees. So you have an oak tree that germinates from an acorn, and that gets eaten before it even gets the chance to establish, before it's even a year old. And so you have a situation where the forest in certain areas look quite healthy. They have these big oak trees. And here on Statia, we have a similar situation where we have this rainforest on the side of this extinct volcano called the Quill. The forest looked very, very healthy. But when you actually go into the forest and you look at the undergrowth of the forest, what you find is there's nothing there. So when these big trees die of old age at 100 years old or 200 years old, there's nothing replacing them. And what you find is that actually is something that you find in common in a lot of places. And the knock-on effects of this can be huge.
And sorry to interrupt, but why is nothing replacing them? Could you explain that?
So basically what's happening is, in a natural situation, trees would die of old age and the tree falls down, it collapses and it creates a patch of light. That then gives the opportunity for younger trees to grow up into that empty patch of light. But because you have these feral animals that are coming through and they're eating all of these saplings, when the old trees die, there are no saplings to replace them. So that means over a long period of time, what had appeared to be a very healthy forest, but was actually made up of only very old trees, they die of natural causes in hurricanes or of disease or just of old age. And they're therefore not replaced by these young trees. So your forest gradually gets smaller and smaller.
But I mean, animals are also part of the natural system. So why are these animals so detrimental?
Oh, absolutely. What you find on a lot of islands in the Caribbean in particular, but also on many other islands around the world, is that the ecosystem of the island becomes very, very specialized. And you often have very few mammals on these islands. So most of these mammals, they just can't make an ocean crossing. The exception, of course, being bats, which can fly. But if goats were to be washed off the mainland in a hurricane, they are very unlikely to be able to swim several hundred kilometers to an island and then colonize that island.
Well, we've seen cows jump fences.
Well, we have seen cows jump fences. That's true. But one of the main reasons for this is that sometimes these ocean crossings can take a long time. And they will die of hunger and thirst before they can get to another island. But what do make their way to islands quite often are reptiles in particular. So birds can fly, but reptiles will often be washed across as a result of hurricanes and other major events, or sometimes even just natural dispersal. And because reptiles are cold-blooded animals, or what's termed cold-blooded animals, they have much lower energetic requirements than mammals do. This means that a reptile can go far longer without food and water than an equally sized mammal. So they are far more likely to make an ocean crossing. So what you find on islands is they tend to be colonized by reptiles, which are smaller in general than grazing mammals. And they also require less food because they have less energetic requirements. For example, on Statia, the largest native land animal is the Lesser Antillean iguana. And these are reptiles that get to about a meter and a half long. They very rarely need to even drink water, which is why they do very well here, because there are no rivers or lakes for them to actually drink from. And they don't need a lot of food, which means they don't overgraze and they don't overbreed. Whereas when you get an artificial introduction of animals like goats or sheep or cows, you suddenly, in ecological terms, have a very, very fast influx of large animals that eat lots and lots of food. And the ecosystem has not evolved to be able to keep up with that level of grazing. The ecosystem here has evolved over the last 50,000 years to effectively keep up with the level of grazing that you would get from these iguanas and the native birds. But suddenly you have all of these mammals come in and the ecosystem just can't keep up with it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think one of the big issues is not so much even the introduced animals being on the island, such as the goats or roaming animals, but the fact that they are then not contained. So they are just let loose to roam free. And that causes a lot of issues.
Yeah, that's right. So on Statia, this is a particular problem. There are other islands nearby where people have these animals, goats and sheep, but they keep them contained, and they're within fenced off areas and so on. On Statia, that is in large part not the case, and that's certainly not with all animal keepers. There are animal keepers who do keep their animals responsibly fenced off, and they feed and water them. But quite a long time ago, and I've heard some people say it was after Hurricane Donna in 1960, and I've heard other people say it was in the early 1980s. But at some point, somebody realized that if they didn't keep their animals fenced, then they didn't have to worry about feeding them or watering them, because the goats and the sheep would find their own food. And soon, lots of people cottoned onto this. And so what people do instead now is they tag certain animals in their particular herd. And because the herd stays together and it stays in the general area of the island, they consider that herd to be their herd, and the herd just roams around and they can do kind of more or less whatever they want. Yeah. And this has been extremely detrimental to the ecology of the island.
So what would you say is one of the main reasons why actual reforestation work and even permaculture is required? Wouldn't you say, like, if you would just get rid of the roaming animals, that the ecosystem would be able to restore itself?
So in the long term, it's likely that that would be the case. One of our worries is that the deforestation on the island does affect rainfall. So the fewer trees you have, particularly around the quill area, because the quill is very high, it creates its own sort of small ecosystem. You have a little cloud forest up there, and that means that it increases the amount of rainfall on the island in general. So the more forest you cut down and the more deforestation you have, the less tree cover you have, so the less rain you have, so then the less tree cover you have in the long term and the less rain you have, and so on. So what we're hoping to do is we're hoping to basically help nature along. So we're planning on planting these trees to artificially, in the short term, increase the amount of tree cover on the island so that nature can eventually take over. Now, we won't be able to produce as complex a forest as is natural on the island. There are something like 700 different native plants on the island, and we can't hope to grow 700 species of plants. So what we're doing is we are focusing on a handful, so sort of 15 to 20 of what we consider to be the most important plants or the most resistant plants. And then when these plants have established, and when we're no longer needing to water these trees after the first year or two, and when we've left these areas sort of on their own, other species will start to move in. So birds will come in, and birds will defecate seeds. Iguanas will come in and move seeds in. Seeds will blow on the wind, and so on. And and that's the point at which the ecosystem becomes more complex.
And how long would it take for this forest to mature? Because people, they like quick results, right?
Well, this is one of the big problems, is that people do like quick results, and often politicians like quick results. If a politician is going to be in power and for the next 4 years, they will generally want results within 4 years, so they could say that look what we did. But unfortunately, that's not the case. The way things work, and in particular when you're talking about dry ecosystems, so lots of the lower land in Onstacia is what's called xeric Caribbean forest or Caribbean coastal scrub, and that just means that it is scrubland, which is naturally very, very dry. As a result of this, the trees that survive in these areas tend to be very slow growing. So you have to make in order to be able to get results, you have to choose a certain number of trees that are relatively quick growing. You have to make sure that you're not just choosing these trees. You have to choose the kind of the more slow growing trees that will be able to take over in the long term. But what we have found on our site that we fenced off, I think we finished fencing that off something like maybe 9 or 10 months ago, the grasses and the shrubs initially do grow in surprisingly quickly. The trees will take some time, but there is ground cover very, very quickly. And even just this low ground cover of grasses and these small shrubs has a huge impact when it comes to reducing the amount of erosion that is happening.
So you've been talking about the benefits of reforesting for the ecosystem. So, you know, possibly increase in biodiversity, preventing erosion, attracting more rain to the island, so making it a cooler climate. But what are the negative consequences of deforestation for people? And then I think in the same line, what are the benefits of reforesting for people?
So I've already spoken about the impact on the economy with regard to fishing and diving, which are two of the industries on the island, as a result of erosion. Right. You also get, as a direct result of erosion, you get loss of land. So there are areas on the island where there are houses on the edges of cliffs, and these houses are now abandoned because the cliffs almost completely surrounding the houses have all fallen into the sea. So on station, we're literally losing land. And it's a very small island. There isn't a lot of land here anyway, really. In addition to that, one thing that deforestation has a very severe impact is on the temperature of the island. And this also kind of ties into what we were talking about with rainfall earlier. When you end up with trees being cut down, you end up with an island that doesn't have any shade. and this therefore heats the island up, which means you get this very, very hard baked earth. It means you're reducing the amount of transpiration because you don't have these trees, this tree cover. So you actually increase the temperature of the island and you reduce the humidity on the island. Now, this has been shown to have actually quite negative psychological impacts on people when they live in areas which have very little tree cover and are extremely hot. Then productivity tends to go down. It also means that people are using a lot more energy. So people are using their AC units far more. And on an island where much of our energy comes from diesel power generators, that has a very negative impact in the long term. Now, Stacia is very lucky in that we have a large solar farm, and that provides all of our energy needs during the day. And that's something that very few islands of our size have. So we're very lucky there. But still at nighttime, all of our power is provided by diesel generators.
I was going to ask, in a place without any trees, would a single tree already make a difference in town, for example?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you stand, if you're ever somewhere very hot, like Stacia, if you stand in the sun and then you take a step 2 or 3 meters to your left and you're in the shade of a tree, the temperature can reduce by something like 15 degrees. So it has a huge impact on the, you know, a single tree. And there is a reason why you see these photos of an area of savanna in East Africa or somewhere where you have a herd of springbok, and they're all gathered under this one lone tree because it has such a huge impact, even just one tree. So if you end up getting rid of all of the trees in an area, it just the general temperature underneath or at ground level can hugely increase.
Yeah, well, I mean, I even remember it growing up and going to school. So the school playgrounds usually would be all asphalt, and then you had, you know, a couple of spots where they would have trees. And some of them were quite young, and then some were way bigger. And I mean, you see the same with the herd of animals you were talking about in East of Africa. I mean, we were doing the same, you know, during the lunch break and school breaks, we would just all huddle up underneath the trees or, you know, looking up the shade because the sun is just too hot to stay on there. So I also remember we had like a little area behind the school where there were several big, you know, old trees, and that was kind of one of the favorite hangout spots just because of the cooler
absolutely climate. And what happened in Hurricane Irma, and Irma was the most powerful hurricane to hit Stacia since I think 1960. It may have been one of the most powerful hurricanes to ever hit Stacia, is that lots of these really big trees were all just blown down, you know. So you had these areas where there were meeting spots where people would go to socialize, and they would go to socialize there because you had these really, really big trees with these great canopies, and those trees were blown down. And because of the situation with the roaming animals, those trees were planted long before those animals were on the island. And now there would not be any trees replacing them naturally, because before they get to a meter high, the goats eat them.
Yeah, so that was kind of the situation you
exactly,
were
sketching
in the beginning.
So that's another thing we're doing is that we're trying to replace a lot of these trees that were destroyed by the hurricane. And that is proving a challenge because if you've ever owned goats, then you'll know that they are just fantastic at getting through fences. So it's one of our major issues is keeping livestock, in particular the goats, out of these areas. And you only need to do it until these trees are maybe 3 meters high, but until that point you need to keep the animals out.
Because going back to the hurricanes, maybe you can explain this, but I heard that when trees are lost, you get like more open space and this can cause even more damage.
Yeah, exactly. So you get what's called habitat fragmentation. So when trees die naturally, but also particularly as a result of hurricanes, you end up with what was previously kind of a blanket of trees. And that gets slightly fragmented because some of the trees have been blown down, particularly on the outsides of this forest. And the more an area gets fragmented and the more it kind of breaks down from one big block of trees into a number of smaller blocks, you increase the surface area on which future hurricanes can act. Therefore, you get more trees that blow down in the next hurricane. So the forest becomes more fragmented. So the next time you have a hurricane, more trees are blown down, and so on and so on. So and this then has again, knock-on impacts on the continuity of the forest. So you end up with populations of animals that can't get between these areas of forest, and that has negative impacts on the genetic diversity in various areas and so on.
And will this also affect people?
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. When you have a situation like this on Statia, the sort of all of this drop in forest cover has an impact on people for the reasons we've just said. You know, you end up with less rainfall. When you end up with less rainfall, people have to, so currently we're under water rationing because we're at the end of the dry season, and this will only get worse and worse, which means we will then have to use desalination to make more water, and that's very energy intensive and so on. So anything that reduces forest cover will have a negative impact on people on the island as a whole.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, also what you mentioned, so it's not only the on mental well-being, because, I mean, within environmental psychology, a lot of research has been done on the restorative powers of the environment, but also, you know, the economic value. So one of my professors actually just published a study about how the presence of trees can increase the value yeah. of houses with incredible percentages. I think it was like 20 or 25%, which is just insane. You know, the presence of just a couple of trees, how that can, you know, increase the value of stuff. So it's, like you said, it has economic benefits, but it also has mental well-being benefits. Being out in nature can help reduce stress levels, and just, you know, being more connected to the environment, seeing trees, having this cooler climate. So, yeah, I can imagine there are so many forgotten yeah. benefits yeah. almost that trees
absolutely,
have.
Absolutely, yeah. Well. Yeah, yeah. The psychological impact of having trees around, as you've said, it's been shown in multiple studies that it has a huge positive impact on human well-being, as it were.
Yeah, yeah. And if we then move on a bit to yes. permaculture, what we also talked about, because it's not just mental health, but it's also physical health and nutrition.
Yeah, yeah. Wise,
right? So there's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing that we would really like to see a greater move towards on Statia is food security. And this has been really brought to the fore by the current COVID-19 crisis that's been going on. Now, as an island, we've been extremely lucky in that we have not had an outbreak on the island. But that has required that we shut down all of our flights to and from the island. And there was a time when we were worried that our cargo ships wouldn't necessarily be coming in. And mm-hmm. a lot of people then started to worry that there wouldn't be food, that food prices would go up and so on. But several hundred years ago, people on Statia were able to survive more or less by themselves, a lot of people, without having to import any food. So it's definitely doable here. Mm-hmm. And there are other islands that have much better food security that are nearby. St. Kitts is a very good example, where they don't have to import as much food. So we would really like to start encouraging people to grow more food. And one way you can do this is by this, as we mentioned earlier, permaculture, where you effectively build a forest that can then cope by itself. And you don't have to do anything with it. You don't have to go and plow fields or, you know, sow seeds and so on. Once you've got it going, and this sometimes can take quite a while to get the forest properly sorted, so you don't have to put any more inputs into it. When you've done that, that forest could last more or less indefinitely. And then you have a situation where you can just go and get food from that forest, and you can easily get more food from that forest than you could personally ever eat. So, you know, this is something we're trying to make a showcase for. So one part of our land has been set aside for permaculture. The idea is that section mm-hmm. of land will become a model permaculture forest, that we will be able to show people how we've done it. We'll be able to look at the best way of doing it on Statia specifically, and what works best and what doesn't work so well. And hopefully then people can set aside an area of their land, even if it's a small area, and start producing more of their own food.
Yeah.
How would you communicate your results with the people in Statia and the public in general? Are you already doing that, or do you plan to do that in the future?
So we have the National Parks Agency, STANAPA. We have an outreach officer, and part of what she does is she is very connected with social media. So we have a Facebook, we have Instagram and Twitter and so on. And so she regularly puts posts out about the reforestation project. The other thing that she and I do is we go into the local schools, and we do that normally once a month. And we do reforestation based classes at all levels of the local schools. We also have, particularly for the older kids, they can come to the site with their sort of with their classes and with their teachers, and we do tours of the site there. So we do want to get our message out. We also collaborate with another organisation on the island, which is called Mainland Station, which is specifically an agriculture organisation. So so we collaborate with them, and we sort of both help each other out. And I think that's very important, because it makes so much sense to collaborate and to share expertise than right. to have everybody in their own separate little pocket. So the guy who is in charge of that project, a guy called Taro, he's been doing that now for about 3 years, and I've only been on the island for about a year. So he obviously knows a lot more about the actual practicalities of growing things on the island than I do. Although we are growing slightly different types of plants, there is obviously some crossover.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of another thing that we do, is we're looking to collaborate with as many people as we can.
Yeah. So it seems as if planting trees can solve a whole lot of challenges that we're
facing. Yeah, I mean, it really can. Right. It's astonishing when you look into it, how many problems when you look up the line, when you look upstream, are a result of a lack of forest cover or deforestation. There is a really kind of good case study, which is in the early to mid 1980s, there were huge famines in northern Ethiopia. So we then had the Live Aid concerts and lots of money being raised for famine relief. But these famines were a direct result of clearing forests for traditional crops. So things like wheat and so on. And again, mm-hmm. looking even further back, you had exactly the same thing happened when prairies were cleared in the US during the 1930s. You ended up with the Dust Bowl and a recession and so on. You know, so there are so many case studies that have shown the direct impacts of just removing forest cover. But on the flip side, what you also find is there are huge success stories where people All right. have replaced forest cover. So again, going back to northern Ethiopia, in the 30 years or so since these huge famines, there are large tracts of forest that have been replanted in a very similar manner to what we are doing here. So they fence off these areas, much, much larger areas than we're doing, of course, I mean, much larger areas than our entire island, but they have fenced off these areas to prevent roaming animals getting in. They've replanted with native species. They've recruited the local people to keep an eye on making sure the fences are intact. Nobody's cutting the fences to let their animals in and so on, as a community project. And what they have found is that the positive impacts of this large-scale reforestation have been astounding. So you have there are animals and plant species that have come back to the areas after being missing for 50 years. Wow. There are even streams and rivers that are flowing now in these areas that haven't flowed for 50 years, just as a result of replanting these trees and making sure that the forests are protected and maintained. I mean, it's just, it really is impressive. And that's happened in only 30 years, which, you know, in ecological terms is the blink of an eye. So it really goes to show that although there are major issues, and Stacia is a very good example of where there are problems, but not specific to Stacia. I mean, everywhere has similar problems to this, but it's a very good kind of proxy. It goes to show that if you have a concerted effort, particularly a concerted community effort, you can turn things around really very, very quickly, and it benefits everybody.
Right. And this reforesting and permaculture, everyone can do it, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter if you are doing a large-scale project like we are, where you're planting thousands of trees, or if you've only got room in your garden for one tree. If every person plants one tree, then you have thousands of trees. And the great thing about a lot of these trees, particularly the ones that we are focusing on, is they're very low maintenance trees. So they're trees that you can plant and you could water once every couple of days for the first year, maybe not even that, even in the wet season. And after that, you don't need to do anything with them. They'll look after themselves. It's very, very easy to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I loved kind of what you were saying just now, that it is possible to create this turnaround. And so we can basically draw the conclusion from that.
No, exactly.
I had to throw it in there, you know. Yeah. No, we're not. And like you said, I think that's beautifully worded, and that, you know, if the community works together, if we just all join forces and work towards the same goal and have this information as well, because I really feel that not a lot of people truly understand the power of having trees and having proper vegetation, basically.
And I can imagine for a lot of people, it can be very overwhelming, you know, all this, these problems and this deforestation, and, you know, gosh, where do I start? What would you suggest to them as a, like, a tip?
Well, I mean, it literally is just as simple as plant a couple of trees, make sure they're protected. You could plant a few papayas, something like that, even very fast growing. They'll provide you with food very quickly. And as I say, if everybody does this, you know, plants a couple of trees, make sure they're protected. That's really all it will take. And if you have the luxury of time, there are always organizations out there that are looking for a hand, you know, even if it's just for 2 hours on your weekend planting a few trees. The long-term impact of those trees psychologically and ecologically and environmentally in general, with the amount of carbon that they take out of the atmosphere is and will take out of the atmosphere for potentially the next 200 years is really huge.
Yeah. And I think another question, though, because this is something that is maybe a bit more sensitive, because I know, you know, on the islands, especially, and not even on the islands, but just everywhere in the world, there's always this tension between, you know, the built environment and the natural environment. You know, what are things we need to take into consideration when we are deciding to put down a new building, or if we need housing for people? What would be something that we need to keep in mind?
Well, I mean, I certainly think that we need to work in harmony with nature more. Just because you are a developer doesn't mean you have to be a destructive developer. There was a place that I used to live and work at, which was in the Bahamas, and they built a resort, a holiday resort. But they managed to build this resort for less money than a traditional resort would have cost. And they reduced their footprint by putting houses on stilts. They reduced it by designing their buildings in such a way that the breeze would move through the buildings and they didn't need AC units. They surrounded all the houses with the existing existing forest, which meant that they were protected against high winds and salt spray and so on. The whole thing was solar powered, which you're able to do because you didn't need lots of air conditioning and so on. So we just need to start thinking a little bit more about how we develop. If you have an area of land that you want to clear because you bought it and you want to build a house there, then don't clear all of it. Maybe leave a board around the edge, leave some of the bigger trees there, because the reality is that if you're leaving trees around the edge, you're giving yourself a windbreak. So you're not only giving yourself the benefit of having shade from these trees, but particularly when you're talking about the Caribbean and other tropical areas, you're protecting yourselves from tropical storms and the impact of these natural windbreaks on reducing damage to buildings from tropical storm is huge.
Right. And for like people who might want to plant something after they've gotten all enthusiastic after all you've just told them, obviously, what kind of choices of plants would you suggest and why?
Well, speaking from the point of view of the Caribbean, where I'm based, there are a few major criteria that you need to think about. The first one, as I just mentioned, is that we have a lot of storms here. Seychelles is often very lucky. There are other places that are not. So you want to choose something that is very hurricane resistant. So great examples of this on the island that I am at the moment are things like the sea grape tree and the gum tree. Gum trees are... it's kind of a catch-all term, but the Caribbean gum tree is very different from the ones you get in Australia and so on. Also known as the tourist tree. They're both very, very hurricane resistant. They're also, particularly the sea grape trees, they're very, very salt resistant. So if you're in an area where you get a lot of salt spray, you want something that can resist that. And then finally, they're also very drought resistant. So as I've mentioned, you can have these huge storms that happen in September. But by the time you get through to May, where we are now, it is bone dry here and everything is brown. You know, we really, really want the rain to start. But nevertheless, the gum trees are doing fine and the sea grapes are all doing fine. So these are the main things that we think about, certainly.
And if I wanted to buy or source some of these trees and plants, where should I go to get them? And what's the kind of stuff I need to think of?
All of these trees that we're choosing are either native or naturalized species. So native species are species that have been here for thousands of years. And naturalized species are species that were brought here by humans, but have now become a part of the ecosystem in a non-detrimental way. A good example of that on station would be mango trees. And the great thing is that when you're living somewhere like here, these trees, they grow by the side of the roads and they fruit by the side of the road. So you can literally go out and collect the seeds from some of these plants. There are other methods you can use as well. So you can get cuttings. And if you know somebody who is going to be trimming a tree and you know a few months in advance, you can actually go and do what's called air layering, which is where you could use a technique where you effectively get a branch to start producing roots while still a branch. You can then remove that branch and plant that as a ready mature tree. So I have a number of gum trees that were removed from as branches from other gum trees that a member of the public here wanted to trim. And they're now rooted and they're now 3 meters high, which if I was growing them from seed would take maybe 4 or 5 years. So there are certainly ways to do it. And it's not a difficult thing to do.
No. And I can also imagine that it's just a general tip for anyone anywhere in the world listening to kind of look up your local sources. So on Curaçao and Aruba and St. Martin and Anastasia, I know that there are organizations that are cultivating native species trees and that are always looking for people to adopt a tree or, you know, collect some seedlings to plant them out on their private property, stuff like that. So I guess a general tip for all listeners would be to just kind of do a bit of research and look up the organizations that are working on reforesting projects and help them out and see if you can gather some of their
absolutely. You know, if you're not sure as to where to go and where to look, you know, the probably a good port of call is just get hold of your national parks agencies, and the likelihood is that they will know. If they're not doing projects themselves, they will know people that are.
Well, cool. Adam, what would your take home message be to the listeners?
I think my take-home message is probably that trees are potentially more important than you think. They're not just homes for native species. They're not just pretty when you see them on the side of a hill or a mountain. They actually are an integral part of your life, whether you necessarily realize it or not. And the impacts of deforestation affects the ecology of the island, but they also affect humans psychologically and economically. But that if we work together if we work together as a community, the detrimental damage or the damage that has been done to the environment can be reversed in a surprisingly short period of time. And the benefits of this will be absolutely huge. Like I say, psychologically, ecologically, and economically massive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Planting trees forever.
Planting trees forever.
Trees for the win.
Trees for the win.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for your time, Adam, and all this really helpful and interesting information. I think it will definitely benefit a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of people learn a lot from what you had to say. So thanks for that.
Oh, no, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I hope that people will take something away from this, certainly. And hopefully some of your listeners are going to go and plant trees right now.
So would you...
Exactly. Right.
And so would you agree that we're not doomed yet?
Not yet. We've still got time to turn things around. Absolutely.
Awesome.
All right. Awesome.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you so much, Adam. It's always such a pleasure to talk with you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye.
So if you've made it this far, despite our mediocre editing skills, and enjoyed this discussion with Adam, next week we'll have a new speaker lined up for you. Hope you'll tune in next time.